All right, well, so welcome to the July 31st meeting of the Configuration Persistency team call. Today, we are just 1 week out from M2, actually. So I think we're good. We're close to M2 with R7. That should probably be on the agenda, too. Powell is going to talk about, I think, the non-real-time RIC. And I had just talked with Chakra yesterday, so we probably might want to talk about the architecture subcommittee presentation and the component description.
Absolutely, I've got a quick one on that as well.
Yeah. Any other items to add? Oh, I guess we can continue the POC architecture.
I think I've got something that's ready to go.
Good. Okay. Okay.
We can start the discussion there.
Yeah. So let's get started. Powell, did you have anything you wanted to present, or did you want to?
Actually, not this time yet. So I tried to figure out how to present our requirements against the CNPS service, and. I need to talk to guys from ML team. I mean, from my team who works on machine learning model, just to find out what we need from the persistency service. We need to be able to read the data. And I also wonder whether we need some time series data, and how to filter the data, and how to maybe aggregate the data to have some average value from some period. So since we have a vacation period, I didn't have a chance to talk to them. And I hope that as soon as I be in touch with them, we'll provide some requirements. And I think that also we'll need to have information about topology from the service. I need to dip more into the design of the CPS to find out how the data are planned to be modeled and what we could get from the service and in what format. So I'm not very familiar with the service, and also I need to investigate more in it, but I'm still the most interested in the external API of those of this service.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I'll take a couple of those very briefly. So the time series and the temporal aspect is something that is happening in a separate but related proof of concept. In the same time frame, and Bruno is on the call, he's driving that. In terms of the APIs, as I've said previously, and again, we are in the midst of holiday season, but my expectation is that the first draft and the first revisions of the interface will actually come from the implementation of the proof of concept, and that what I will provide in the high-level design is the intent for those interfaces without actually specifying exactly the swagger files for the REST interfaces.
But I mean that in context of time series, I more think about the PM data. So I'm not sure, because I think that I heard that this time series had to be more for configuration and historical configuration of the service. And I'm talking more about the PM data, how to aggregate average performance for some period of time, just to better prepare a training data or have a pre-prepared data for scoring machine learning model. So I'm not sure if the time series are considered in the same way as I think.
Yep. Hi, Powell. This is Ted Johnson. I'm actually working on the real-time RIC. And I'm one of the developers of the MCX app. And one of the things that's happening in the real-time RIC is Nokia has a plan to install basically InfluxDB. They're writing a layer over it. I forget what they're calling it, to actually manage these time series. But this is in the real-time RIC, but you might consider doing something similar and investigate what Nokia is doing within the real-time RIC.
Okay, it's great to hear it. And is there any place in the Confluence where I could find information about it?
I'm not certain. I mostly keep my head down and develop stuff. I'm not certain what Nokia is calling it. I've been kind of supportive of it because that reduces the load on the MCX app. But I'm not really exceptionally involved with what they're doing. I can try to take a look if you'd like.
Who is just speaking about the MCXF and real-time RIC? I, for some reason,
it was Ted Johnson speaking. Yeah.
Oh, Ted. Okay, got it. All right, thanks, Ted.
Okay, great. Yeah, go ahead.
We're back to you next week, okay. Or I can send you an email. It's your email should be up there.
And the last thing, Pavel, I think that you talked about was accessing inventory or topology information, and that is something that's quite important to ONAP, that the database of record for inventory and topology type information is an AI, and it is not our intention to duplicate the function of an AI. We will absolutely need to have some way to relate the information that is in the configuration of persistency service with inventory items. But if you need to query topology or inventory items, then the available and active inventory will be the database of record for that information. You shouldn't use the configuration of persistency service for that information directly. That's my understanding of it.
So from the non-real-time RIC, I believe that there will be a R1 API that will be abstraction for any kind of information from both from ONAP or and from RAN. So I'm not sure whether there will be two sub interfaces in the R1 API, one to CNPS service and one to AAI. I don't know. So whatever it will be, probably we will work on the implementation of this interface in non-real-time RIC.
Yep, that's fair. That's fair enough. It could well be, Pavel, that what we end up is a northbound interface component that realizes the R1 interface or whatever it is that is exposed externally from ONAP. That's not part of a conversation that I'm a party of, but from an ONAP specific, which is what this meeting is about, there is a clear separation between what is configuration and persistency scope and what is available in active inventory.
So
the two are meant to be complementary and there for different purposes. We need to be very careful and clear about that, because it was one of the questions that was raised at the TSC. So we need to be careful not to duplicate that functionality of ANAI.
I agree. I agree that there shouldn't be any redundancy in data in AI and CNPS, and there should be separate information stored in both services. So probably information about RAN topology would be in CNPS, and information about VNF or CNF or the RAN itself, about components, resources, and services will be still in AI.
That's so possible.
It is how I see it.
Yep, and I don't have any hard and fast opinion on exactly what will be stored where, and I want to kind of stay out of that conversation. I just want to make sure that within the configuration of persistency service, we can store data that is modeled by a Yang model.
So I still wonder whether, as I mentioned on last call, I wonder what to do with VES events, whether they should be modeled to Yank and stored in configuration and persistency service, or they should be stored somewhere else, or each service should store the data in a different manner. So this is what I wonder the most about PM, whether they should be treated as a Yank model event-based events, or they should be stored in as JSON tags or JSON entities in database.
And I guess Pavel, this comes down to how expensive is access to that information. How expensive is storage for that information, and what are the latency requirements, and how many consumers of that information are there in the system? So if you answer those three questions, then you can use the information from those answers to make an educated guess as to whether or not you want to store things in a single location and streamline the handling of them rather than duplicating the processing in multiple components. So you need to answer those three questions to determine exactly how you want to handle the data.
Yeah, but it is also the idea of, it's also what stands behind the idea of CNPS, whether it store all the data some data that makes sense.
Idea behind the configuration and persistency service is originally to store configuration data. There's a lot of different types of configuration data that is specified by a lot of different types of and versions of network functions. So we can try and normalize all that, and that puts a load somewhere else on the system, or we can try and store the information in an agnostic way. In order to do that, we need to be model driven. So that's what we're attempting to prove in our proof of concept in the Guilin timeframe. The benefit, or one of the side effects of making the CNPS model driven, is that any data that is defined by a Yang model can be persisted in the CNPS. So it doesn't care anymore whether it's configuration or performance or any other type of data or service related. It simply doesn't matter. It doesn't care anymore. It just cares that the model has been defined by a Yang in Yang, and then it can persist it. So then it becomes the decision of the application or the use case as to whether or not the CNPS is a suitable repository for that data.
I think also another point to add is that one of the big divisions that we need to be clear on, because the TSC was kind of grilling us about, was, you know, the CNPS DB is meant to store, we're designing it to store and focus on network element data. And that could be, you know, that could be PM data, that could be operational data, that could be configuration data, anything that doesn't belong in inventory, basically state information. And I think we also need to just be clear that we're not aiming, at least, you know, that's not our charter, is to try to usurp or replace the existing 35 databases of management framework data, which correct. I think caused a lot of confusion in our initial presentations to the TSC. So I think I agree with Tony. I mean, anything that any kind of network element data can be stored. It's completely up to the owning microservice so if you have a machine learning microservice that's going to use KPIs or performance measurement time series data, I think that thing is going to own and define and care about the data that's stored in the CNPS. This is just a repository of whatever you want to store, essentially. I agree with Tony. I think maybe, Tony, do we need to add something else here as a topic? I don't know if...
I think we said it, but I think it's also a little bit different to how things have been done in a lot of companies and a lot of projects before.
Yeah.
So I think we've said it and we've said it clearly, but I think as more and more people are introduced to this, there's just a little bit of a competence shift or a journey that they need to take to understand that, that this is, it's a generic data store for anything that can be modeled in Yang.
Right.
But its primary focus is configuration and state data from network functions. That's its primary focus, but not it, it will not be exclusive to that by very nature of the fact that we're making it model driven.
Okay, good. Powell, did that answer your concern? I guess we'll also come back next week when you touch base with your team.
So you answered the question. However, it seems that the configuration persistency service is not intended to be to store everything, just CM VES events, right? I mean, the VES events that contains the configuration information, not about PM, FM.
It can store.
Yes, it can. But I thought that the idea of the service is to store everything, everything from RAN, not just CMPM. But it seems that it's mainly for configuration data, but it's generic enough to store everything. But it's not
Let's look at it this way, right? Don't forget about ANAI, right, which is also a database, right?
Right.
We have to create a Venn diagram that's mostly non-overlapping. ANAI,
yeah,
but complementary, so that it does things that ANAI can't do today, is intended to do, right? Mm-hmm. And so that would help clarify. We don't want to recreate the wheel, right? There's a lot of momentum going in there. I mean, we may need to have projections of what ANAI has into what we have. Like, all right, for example, there's multiple slices that are being stored in ANAI in terms of their resource mapping, right? But then that has each one of those slices will have configuration information in it that may be different that map into those resources, right? I think state is a huge benefit that ANAI will never have in it, and we really need to develop that going forward. But I think that's you got the idea now. There should be complementary with minimal overlap. There's always going to be some overlap, right? But then you have to
minimize it,
and whatever is there has to be managed and maintained, right? Because you have to keep it in sync, and that's always a hassle.
Yeah, and it's that. That's why we want to keep it to an absolute minimum. The only thing we need is to be able to make sure that we have data in the configuration and persistency service that is related to something that is in inventory, that we're able to understand that relationship. So if somebody says, okay, there's a network function, can you please give me the configuration data related to that network function?
Yes, exactly.
That's what we need. And we need state, the same language to identify
the
network function.
How do we do that and maintain that mapping is also a critical.
Yes.
Part of the picture. There's some, might be some kind of a graph database that needs. I mean, I love the fact that we were talking about a temporal database and how valuable that is in addition to the time series database, but how do we get these two connected and then sync all the time seamlessly? You know, and that's maybe it's a graph database. I don't know.
Yep. Okay. To be explored.
That's a really good thought. Fred, I think we should. I like that thought. We can kind of try to draw some kind of Venn diagram. Yeah. Okay. I'll see if I can do something like that. All right. Great. Okay. Let's move on. Where are we in terms of the project in R7? So we're rapidly coming up to M2, M3, and maybe a lot of people here are not so involved with that. But I'm the Nokia's proxy for the TSC in July as Timo's out. And
voting member.
Yeah. So one of the things that they're talking about right now is basically trying to achieve the M2M3 gate, which I voiced yesterday. I said it seems really short because they pushed out M1 by 3 weeks and they're not pushing out M2 or M3, which is extremely short time frame, obviously, but they're trying to keep to the overall end delivery. So they're asking people like Zoo needs to fill out the 324 and Tony, we need to fill out the 322s, M2, M3 scorecard. So, and I filled out, you know, the ones that I'm involved with. But let's take a look at 322 really quick. And as a team, we can discuss where we think we are. What we need to do is basically if you look at this, M2, M3 scorecard, it tells you kind of what it means. So what they need us to do basically is we need to set this thing to some value, right? Basically it says at M2, you've got all your requirements and architecture in place, basically. And at M3, you have your APIs and are delivered and done, and your data data models are in place. So if you're green, that means you're on track. If you're yellow, that means you might be behind. There's some issue with trying to deliver. And certainly, I think the super short time frame is an issue for most people.
Yeah, I mean, just to take that into account, the only impacts that we'll have in the 322 requirement are coming from the use cases that are going to use the I'm going to call it the legacy implementation.
Yeah.
And we don't have any schema updates as yet. And the schema updates will directly dictate the interface changes in that implementation. They will change as a result of that. So that's I would risk, say that right? We're on track, but yellow, because that interface, we cannot guarantee that that interface isn't going to change. In fact, we're pretty sure that it will change.
Mm-hmm. And that's fine. I think all we need to do is just say, you know, we're basically on track. And I think most things are kind of in that same boat. All we need to do, so Tony, if you want to add a comment, just basically saying what you said, I think that'd be good. So just go to 322, say, you know, we're basically on track, but we have some dependency on that AI model delivery.
322.
Yep. Okay. And Zoo, I noticed you haven't set yours either. So just go into your software upgrade, 324 REQ. And if you think you're completely on track, but green, if there might be any risk that you're behind, August 6th, by the way, next week, like 6 days from now, is the M3 drop. So it's a very, very short time
cycle.
So
when we say on track, is just the API?
So M2 is your data model, your architecture level definition, meaning you know and understand what you want your use case to do. And M3 is the API delivery. So you can go to here. Let me just I've been working on the process too. I can put this in the chat here. So I think this is kind of what we're expecting at M2. So at M1, you know, you have your project approval and your architecture subcommittee reviews, et cetera, et cetera. So M2, I think you've completely defined your functionality. All your test cases are defined. You understand if you need to descope anything. And you've started to think about your API documentation. You've got all your VNF requirements identified, at least, maybe not done, but identified. You started to think about your data model. And all your JIRA tickets are in place, which I think everybody's is. You may have started thinking about your modeling discussions for your data model. This isn't something I, most of this isn't something I put in, but there's also an item about vendor equipment, which, I don't think we have any vendored equipment to deliver. And then at M3 is the API freeze. So you're at that point, your data model obviously has to be done in order to feed into your API. And you've basically, defined and delivered your API. So M3 is clearly characterized by the data model and API stuff. And M2, I think, is, for me, is more characterized by you've got everything defined that, sort of the traditional system engineering type work is done, I would say. So they told us at the TSC yesterday that basically, if you're yellow, that's fine. Just write down where you think you might have some extra work to do. That doesn't mean like you have to immediately descope something or anything. They just want to know kind of where things are, basically. So that gives them, I think that gives them a sense also of, do we need to push out M2 or M3 as well? I mean, if everything is, yellow or red or something, then that might give them an indication that that things are behind. If everything is green, they're not going to push anything behind, right? So it just depend, just assess truthfully where you think you are, and then the TSC will talk about what the status of the release is. They spend at least 40-45 minutes just talking about and going through the status. So they do look at all of these things that people think, and they emphasized and underscored and begged and pleaded everybody to basically, if you're yellow, just write a comment of, with a short description of what where you might be yellow and how what the risks are. So, okay. I think.
Can I just put in a simple comment there if you want to?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, okay. Great. Great. Also, there I don't know that we need to track the POC status one, but
apparently not.
Yeah, I don't think we probably need to track the POC.
I haven't been doing anything in that. And if it is, I'm going to try and leave it to Tuan.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't track the POCs. They don't track the M2 or M3 thing. Okay, that makes sense. All right, great. Okay, that's that. So the architecture subcommittee presentation, Tony, do you want to?
Yeah, I just, a quick one on that. Maybe I'll share if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Because I have that kind of prepared. Where is my button gone for this meeting? Zoom meeting, share screen. This screen, isn't it? Share. Hopefully you get to see the gyro ticket. Are you seeing the gyro ticket?
Yeah.
Okay. How do you move this thing? It's hiding my windows. Apologies for this, gentleman. I couldn't see. This thing was up at the top of the window. I couldn't see these things. This is the architectural diagram. Okay, so here there's an interface for the UI, which is fine, goes to operations. I don't have that in the high-level POC, so this is a directly equivalent.
If you go back to that for a second. So yesterday, Chuck and I were talking about architectural process and stuff, and we talked about this page briefly as well. Mm-hmm. So he originally had this mistitled, so I titled it Configuration Persistency Service. And then we needed a short thing to label the diagram. And so at first I typed CANDPS, and that didn't quite look right. So he suggested C with a lowercase NPS. And by the way, the reason why at first I used the ampersand, but in the diagram title, it's CNPS_R7.
Didn't like that.
_R7. So I tried to use an ampersand, and the system doesn't let you use the letter ampersand. So just so you know, Of course, we should use C ampersand PS wherever we can, but if you look at right next to the draw.io title, yeah, right there, you'll see how it's C.
Can you use a plus sign, or it will throw up on that too?
It throws up on most of the symbols, unfortunately, which is unfortunate. But yeah, that's also a good thought, Fred. So I think there's Tracker's worked hard to try to get all of the actually draw.io titles to follow the component name underscore the release. And he's actually edited everything himself, but he showed me what he does. So if you go back to your new thing for the project.
Yep, so this is the POC one.
Yeah, see, so you say CMPS context 3. I don't know that this is gonna be actually in the architecture component directory.
No, this is something that needs to be copied across, because this is still looking now at the high level design. So this is the context for the POC. So I was trying to introduce.
Carry on.
The full context. And just in looking at this page for the architecture, I spotted that there were a couple of differences that I wanted to. So I accept that when we do update this, we'll have to maintain this. This notation. I'm totally fine with that. The consistency in the architectural documentation is essential to any kind of automation.
Yeah.
And automation is essential to being able to maintain this going forward. Otherwise, it just becomes a disaster for the PTLs trying to keep up to date. It makes holes in the documentation. So I'm completely on board with that. But it's the technical differences in terms of you have two interfaces here. One is for the UI, and this other one here seems to cover these three interfaces. So model lifecycle data access and change notification, or else you didn't have this one incorporated in this runtime DB E1. So I'm just wondering.
Let me try to understand what the third one is.
Go back to this one. So we have model lifecycle. So how do I add a model to the system?
Okay.
And then data access for CRUD, and then change notification for anybody who's interested in changes to specific pieces of information, which becomes very important when you have a data lake.
So are those going to be actually three different APIs? Each of these little lollipops is meant to be an API, right? So
that's my intention, yes.
Okay. And that's fine. So if we have three that's fine. If we have three completely unique different interfaces essentially to CMPS, we just need to think of who needs to access what, right? I thought about it slightly differently, saying a user might want to access, we might have a separate, you know, API, what I think you were calling the CPI. Yeah. And then
the operations guy. Do you want me to add that? Because I haven't got them in. And I'm quite happy to add them. There will be an administrative access. I just hadn't put it in.
Well, yeah. So that's where I was getting confused also. I thought that change notification was directly to the users, that we could have policies for different types of alerting sent to different users. But then don't you also need an API that will report these that'll look at the configurations from a time series temporal database and capture those changes? Where's the input API coming from? Because there's going to be performance and configuration data deltas that have to be determined either externally or internally and then stored, right? So where's that interface for the input?
So input is through the data access interface.
Okay, I thought that was user related, but I can see now it says controller. Okay, got it. All right, thank you.
Okay, so right, I can add this one that Ben has added here that I don't have.
Yeah, definitely. And again, that should have a policy framework for distribution and access and reporting, I would imagine.
For me, I'm okay. I can see the three interface from CPS, and this one, what is the discrepancy with this one? the one that we are showing here, okay?
And the one that I'm showing now is the one that Ben had created for review with the architecture committee previously. And it exposes two interfaces. One is
this one is the current the current runtime DB implementation. Is it the one?
And we should probably call those CMPS 1, 2, 3, 4, et cetera. So yeah, I'm completely fine to align Tony. I think that's fine.
Okay, so I will copy this one across.
Sure, and I'll add the other ones from yours too. Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Sounds good. Yeah. So now you do have. I see also all those other. Do you agree with the components? DC, policy, SO, external IPS, DC. Those are just. Ones that I'd listed. I don't know if I think they were trying to be complete, and I don't know if
I wanted to avoid that because of the conversation with the TSC. So I just said ONAP components, and then controllers would also be. I called them out specifically because I expect that the when we get into how our models actually delivered to the system, I expect that XNFs will be queried by a controller for their model, and then the CNPS. Will be told about that model.
The only thing is you might get some pushback. You know what? Maybe I'll wait to update that until after you go through architecture review because I'm not sure. It sounds okay to me if everybody else is okay with it. But I think that would make us different than all the other components. And maybe just by our nature we are. But I don't think other components do that.
I do like to try and keep things simple and I don't want to get into right now we do use DCAE. Policy do not use us. Service orchestration does not use us. External API does not use us. SDNC, some of the controllers are using us. OOF, no. VFC, no. ESR, no. So they're not actually using a...
Well, OOF from the SLAM PCI use case is...
Sorry, OOF, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So SDNC and OOF are the ones that are using us today.
And if, you know, in the bottom right is the release, so we can actually delete the ones we don't think nobody's connecting to us to as well.
Which is the alternative approach. I mean, I'll let... the architecture review board decide whether or not
let's wait after the architecture review and we'll update we can update this
because I don't love coming back to change diagrams.
I'm fine to update the diagram. That's not a problem. It's just I'd like to see instead of just radically completely overhauling this and then having to re-overhaul it. Well, let's just wait because I think we're on the schedule. I think now, aren't we?
Yeah, for the 18th.
Yes, we are. Yeah. So I think that's good. Okay.
Okay. So that's what I had on this one, and I fully accept that we need to begin to align these. Yeah. So whenever a diagram is moved in here, I'll make sure that it follows this. If this is updated, I'll make sure that we maintain this naming convention.
Yeah.
And I will. I want to do it before I go on holidays, but I will look to rename things as I've been calling it CPS. I would look to put in the N. I don't mind at all.
Yeah. And maybe in that main where you are right now, maybe we should just stick with the ampersand. That's probably a better idea than the N. We were just forced to use the letter just in the title, and maybe that's the only place we use it. And because everywhere else we use the ampersand. So I think.
Is CPS already taken?
We could just use CPS as well, too. I think that's fine, too.
That's where I've been going without...
Yeah, okay, that's fine, too.
I just kind of did it.
Yeah, sure, that's fine, too. Yeah, whichever, either one is okay with me. So if you just want to use CPS, that's fine, too. Yeah, it's probably easier to say, too.
It is.
Okay.
It just means Crown Prosecution Service to anybody from England.
All right. Okay.
Okay.
Great.
That's that one. I can stop sharing or we can go directly into the issues and assumptions.
Yeah, sure. Let's go on. I think that's our next topic anyway. So yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so I added two more. We had the one that Joanne asked for at the first, when we first brought up this page, the flow of models into the system. and transactional behavior. I think the flow models into the system is going to be a fairly straightforward one. So if I click on that one first, I did some simple sequence diagrams. I think there's three ways in which we'll allow models into the system. I see models coming into the system. So the XNF model is delivered by a vendor package. So this is via the SDC. So that's option A. They're not really options. Again, somewhere out there, I managed to fall into that same pitfall. So this is not so much option A as mechanism A. So we get an onboard, we get a package from the vendor. We onboard it in SDC. This is design time. And then that is published as a CSAR into the runtime via DMAP. The model loader, which is a component on the high level description page, then fetches that CSAR, unpacks it, and then provides to what I'm calling the mirror service, which is responsible for XNF type models and XNF type data, because somebody has to own the data. So I'm electing this guy, the mirror service, to be the owner of all data relating to XNFs. He then uses the model lifecycle management, which is an internal component. These are internal components, part of CNPS, these four guys, and then he stores the model. A model has to be stored prior to data access. I didn't put that on these flows. So that's flow number one, where we get a vendor package. It's published on DMAP. We extract the model from it, and then we load it into the CNPS. The second one is where a model is retrieved directly from the XNF, and this is the one that involves the controller. So we have some controller that fetches a model from the XNF. It then adds the model again to the mirror service, because I've elected the mirror service as the component that owns all models related to network functions, so CM and state. And then internally, again, these three components are CNPS. The model lifecycle management is invoked and the model is stored.
So the mirror service, sorry to interrupt.
Yep,
so the mirror service is basically something that's there to duplicate the functionality interface. I'm a little confused by what.
Okay, we've talked about ownership.
Yeah.
And we said that the CPS as a library, as a component, as a data store, does not own data.
Yeah.
Okay, but we've also in our project proposal said that we will mirror or store CM data and state data from any network function.
Mm.
So we can't say that SDC or DMAP owns the models that are delivered. If I go back up to this one in particular. So who owns this vendor package and the model that comes from it? What software component owns that model? Who's going to be responsible for giving access rights to that data, allowing that data to be shared? So we need to have a model owner. So for the for service models, it's pretty clear the service is going to be the owner of its own model. But for an XNF model, it's not as clear who should be the owner of that data. So that's why I introduced this mirror service to take that ownership, to keep it away from the really generic part of the configuration of persistency store.
Is its only and primary purpose to serve as a kind of buffer for the NF models? Is that what it's...
NF models and data, yeah. So if I go back to the common information model, if I just briefly go back to this picture. So the mirror service is this guy, except he's actually part of the configuration persistency store as a project. So he's a logical component in the CNPS, wow, but he's not part of how we actually persist the data. We have to have a piece of software that's responsible to say, I own these models. If you want to access this data, you must come through me.
This is
the mirror service.
It's kind of like a guardian of me.
Of XNF data. Yeah. He will expose the XNF data. Yeah.
So the thing that I guess rubs my fur the wrong way is it just feels like mirror service is such a generic description that it could be lots of different things. Can we get a little bit more descriptive of...
I'm open to the name.
...exactly what it's doing? So for me, it's kind of like a like a guardian, a buffer, and that's why I asked, is its main and
but
primary.
Specifically to XNF.
Yeah. So maybe XNF guardian, XNF model owner proxy.
XNF model and data proxy. XNF model data proxy.
That would be, I think, at least a little bit more descriptive. So I like it when I can just look at something and see, okay, I at least kind of rough ballpark know what the thing is doing. With mirror service, it can be lots of, my mind can think of lots of different things to mirror.
Understood.
So,
understood.
Yeah. So I like what you just said, XNF model.
Data proxy.
Data proxy. That's perfect for me. Yeah.
Okay. That's done. I will change that across the board.
All right. Great. Thanks.
Okay. I have no problem with, I like collaboration. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks.
I just have to get over my competitive nature. So option B is essentially the same thing. We have to get data into the store. We use a model lifecycle management component internally. And again, the XNF model data proxy is responsible for hosting that. So when the controller pulls a model from the XNF directly, it then adds it to this model data proxy, the XNF model data proxy, which then does the storing internally. And then the final one is where we have an ONAP component or an application. So this is a service essentially, is just invoking the model lifecycle management directly to store a model. So this would be if policy decided that they wanted to store information, they would first need to provide a Yang model that described the information that they wanted to store, which would then be made available in the model store to the other CNPS internal components. Now, it's not necessarily the raw model that we're trying to store here. It's when we parse that model, we will generate artifacts internally that will help us to efficiently validate and parse data that is compliant to those models. Okay, so in all three of these, we see the same component, this model, I didn't expect that to happen, apologies, this model lifecycle management component. So that's the internal side of things, that in all three cases, the model lifecycle management is involved. For XNF data, we will use the XNF model and data proxy component. And as I see it, there's at the moment just three ways in which the models can be added to the system. Via the SDC and DMAP route, directly from the network element where a controller has picked the model from the network element or network function. And finally, if an application decides that it wants to store, and in the proof of concept, this is the one that we'll kind of be working on most because it's the simplest. Okay, are we okay with that? That there are that there's only a single way to add a model to the CPS, but that there are multiple ways. I need to put that in. There are multiple ways. There are three ways to add models to the ONAP system. If that makes sense.
There are three ways to add models to the ONAP system. You mean? What do you mean by that?
There are three ways.
I understand the first sentence you said.
Yeah, I'm just going to try and write it out. There are three.
Or I guess, what do you mean by ONAP system? Do you mean ONAP as a whole, the management platform, all the components collectively together, or some part of CNPS?
ONAP components, the ONAP system. I mean, what do I mean by system? I mean the whole ONAP platform.
Yeah.
And those are identified below. So SDC directly from the network function and applications, application direct. But from a CPS perspective, all models are the same, which is probably a lesser decision.
Okay, that makes sense to me now.
Okay.
Maybe see below, see details below at the end of that.
Yeah.
Good.
And I'll get rid of proposed here, unless there's objections to this. Going.
And the single way to add a model to CMPS is
the model lifecycle management.
Is the model lifecycle management interface. Maybe you need the word management interface. Just to be. Or I was thinking where you say this is the CMPS. This is done through the CMPS model lifecycle management interface. You can probably just delete the parenthetical because you repeat it.
Yeah, it is a bit. This is...
achieved, done, accomplished, yeah. But I would add the word management after cycle and before interface.
Yes, because that's what it is. LCM interface, yeah.
Yep, good. That sounds good.
Thank you.
Hi, Jacqueline here.
Hi, Jacqueline.
Sorry, I joined the meeting a bit late. I have a constant conflict on this meeting. But this point is actually a bit interesting because, and Ben, you may recall this, that I've started trying to look at how in the information model we want to represent models that are ingested by ONAP or added by ONAP. And looking now at these three ways, that I find this really interesting because I had thought about the first way, which is the onboarding, because then you have a model that is, let's say, a design time model, even if it's been, basically it's coming in through SDC and we can consider that it's linked in some way to an XNF version of some sort.
Yeah, and actually, sorry to interrupt, but let me
add the thought there.
So I think Tony, there's actually lots of models that we have to be cognizant of, right? So here we're not talking about the platform information model that Jacqueline
Correct.
Might be starting to talk about, but this is the specifically like the XNF model, like the PNFD type model, I think, that we're talking about here. And then SDC itself takes that input and then overlays it onto the platform information model, which is what the kind of the rest of ONAP uses, right? So
there has to be a way within the platform to identify a Yang model or an XNF model, and I think that was what I was trying to start looking at: is what do we need in the platform information model that just states, here is an external model, we brought it in, here is how we identify it, and here is what owns it. So this question of how it's added, these three points, and then who owns it becomes quite interesting. And then again, the question of how to identify exactly what it is. Because the second point I can see differing from the first one, not necessarily in the types of models, and there would be some sort of matching, but more in this ownership question.
So I think that so when you create a service, which is what you're doing in SDC, you're associating, you know, when you draw the little, you drag and drop those little circles on the SDC GUI and has the little green plus next to it. I think when you create a service, you're also identifying those resources that you're associating with that service. And each of those resources, I think, you can tie a model to it. I think that's how you do that. So
that's what it looks like from the UI perspective. And I think that is, in fact, then compliant to the overall ONAP information model, because services do relate to resources, which then relate to packages, which then may contain vendor models.
Yeah.
But my point was that then at runtime, would there be an overriding of some of those models by a model retrieved directly from the XNF at runtime?
We're going to get into an interesting conversation there about model upgrade, which is one of the things that we do have to talk to, but I'm not quite ready to go there yet.
And it's not something the answer will be, right? So,
well, it depends. I mean, when we get into model upgrade, it is a use case that we have to cater for because
there is a potential collision.
If an XNF is upgraded, with the upgrade would come
we have actions model to upgrade. Take. Yeah. And we have actions to take, but we don't own that actual process, though, I don't think.
No, a controller would have to tell us. Some controller would have to say, I'm going to go down and pull that out. I've now found a new version of a model.
Yeah.
But then if there's data related to that XNF in the CNPS, we have to say, well, okay, do we just toss it all out because that one no longer exists, a new version has been created, or do we have to go through some kind of data upgrade procedure, or how do we want to handle that? And that's a discussion that we do need to have. It's on the list of issues, but we haven't addressed it yet.
Yeah.
It is a good question.
And I think maybe that is something that we should engage Christophe Closette with. I think that Christophe probably has a view on that.
Can you add that to the issue, Ben, the name?
Yeah,
to the issue. Because moment, it's just a placeholder.
Okay.
That we have to think about this.
Sure.
But it would be good to see, you know, I'm going away for 2 weeks. I won't remember, Chris.
Yeah, sure. Let me go to that link. Okay.
Okay. Did that answer your question, Jacqueline?
And by the way, we should probably give Jacqueline a few minutes at the end. Oh, actually,
Jacqueline. The meeting's over pretty much.
You've got a couple minutes. So Jacqueline and I attend the modeling calls each week, right? And Jacqueline has presented on the modeling call the concept of the CNPS POC. And maybe just say a minute, you know, what you're doing there. And so this team is aware of what's going on.
I don't think we have time to look at what I presented, but basically I had taken some of the material from the DDF and tried to extrapolate a little bit. What do we need as some sort of placeholder within the platform information model to support this POC? And basically I've got a very basic proposal, which we haven't really had a chance to look into in detail in the resource information model calls, basically saying, well, we will probably have some sort of application model object in the information model, and then application data that is linked to that, which would then be the actual stored configuration information that we're retrieving from different resources. There's still a lot of questions around that. And I think this discussion now raised new ones. which is a good thing.
Yeah.
No, but it's easier to tackle problems sometimes than to just sort of say, hey, let's model something without really knowing what the parameters are around it, what's the context of it. So this was actually I wasn't on the call for very long, but that was really helpful, actually.
Yeah, so maybe we should, in a future call, give you more time to discuss about the model stuff. Maybe next week we can lead with you if you're available. Do you have a conflict this time slot, or are you? It could start an hour ago, so I don't know if you can only attend half the meeting or.
I have a standing conflict, but I can prioritize if I have to.
So maybe next week we'll start with Jacqueline and she can describe and maybe show the slides that you presented at the modeling call, just so see if this team might be able to, at least should be aware of what's going on there. And I think that would be good.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. So we are at time, guys. So any final thoughts from anybody? So Tony, I added Christophe Closette's name to, I think this is the issue that I should have added it to, right? Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, all right.
Okay. Perfect.
All right. Any final thoughts again from anyone? I think we hit at least all of our topics. So,
Just one last thing. There is a topic at the bottom of this page called transaction behavior. And I've covered
the this page. Oh.
The bottom of the issues and assumptions. Okay. It's maybe not 100% ready, but it is well worthwhile people thinking in terms of how the transactional behavior should look like. And again, this is internal in the Java process space. I personally don't think it's a good idea to try and throw transactions across a REST interface. I think that just confuses. So a little bit of thought has to go into how we want to represent transactions and transaction boundaries. It's, I think, the last of the interface behavioral questions that we have to answer. So at least people get a chance to take a look at it and think about it, so we can have an informed conversation the next time on that issue.
Okay, great. And the information or the component description, is that in this here?
Not on this one. The component description is on the high level design. So if you go up one level, you went up two levels there.
Here?
Yeah, configuration and persistency service, yeah.
Here?
Yeah, and then it's a child page of that.
Here?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, great. All right.
And that actually links to the issues and decisions, and I've been trying to keep it up to date. So when we make decisions, I've been trying to update this.
Great. Okay. All right. Thanks. So again, we'll start with Jacqueline next week, and we'll end the call here. All right. Great. Thanks, everybody. Have a good weekend, and stay safe.
Thanks. See you in a few weeks.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.